You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. You're listening to Sound Poetry, Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 FM. I'm your host, David Gilmore. Today, we're going to have a different kind of programming, a different formatting. We have with us again, and glad to have you, Risa Denenberg of Headmistress Press. Risa is going to be the presenter of a number of poets who are published through her press. So, Risa, if you would please, and I'm glad for all of you to be here, and I wish you well in your reading. Be of a good voice.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, David. And thank you, Steve, for doing the amazing audio for this program. And thank you, poets, for coming today and reading. I just wanted to say a few words about Headmistress Press. So Headmistress Press was actually the brainchild of Mary Miriam, who had run an online magazine for several years before she had the brainchild to start a press. She was publishing poems and art by lesbians and really understood that there wasn't good outlets for lesbians to publish work that related to our own lives. She just felt like a press was needed. She asked me to help, and I said, sure. So we co-founded the press in 2013, I think, and started out. We published a couple of Mary's books, which was wonderful, and a couple of other books. And then we just thought we would start a contest. And we now hold an annual chapbook contest. Readers here, some of whom are winners or finalists in our chapbook contest. We call it the Charlotte Mew Chapbook Contest, annual contest. We've published altogether about 40 books. They're beautiful. They're all very beautiful books, well-designed and produced by Mary. And we have one other thing that we do that's really fun. We produce a set of lesbian poet trading cards, like baseball cards, every year. Those are all available. Our books and our trading cards are all available at our store. And our website is Headmistress Press, one straight line word, Headmistress Press at blogspot.com. So if you have anything you'd like to communicate to us, or if you'd like to see our products, or maybe pitch a book to us, get in touch. All right, so let's start the readings. Our first reader today is Bonnie Morris.
Bonnie J. Morris is a women's history professor, a finalist for the 2020 Excellence in Teaching Prize at UC Berkeley, and the author of 17 books, including Eden Built by Eves, a finalist for the Lambda Literary Award, The Disappearing L, and The Feminist Revolution, which made Oprah's book list as a must-read for Women's History Month. She also published the time travel novel Sappho's Bar and Grill for Bywater Books, which was a finalist for the Forward National Award in LGBT Fiction, and in 2018 won the Devil's Kitchen Award from Southern Illinois University. Dr. Bonn won the Finishing Line Press Poetry Award for her first chapbook, The Schoolgirl's Atlas, and is now proud to be a new headmistress poet with her forthcoming volume, Earlier Households.
Bonnie, I'm going to ask you a quick question and then you should just start reading.
I'm in Santa Cruz, California.
Great. And what do you see when you look out your window?
I see redwood trees.
That's wonderful. Go and read now.
Hi, I'm delighted to participate, and I'm going to read one poem from my first volume of poetry, The Schoolgirl's Atlas. This is called Like a Boy. Stopping at the giant artichoke in Castroville, California, I'm the only one who dares to try the stale artichoke candy on display. It cracks my bottom tooth in one quick chip of painless flyaway. I had all perfect teeth until today. It doesn't hurt, it doesn't really show. In seconds, I can whistle like a boy. And I remember being 8, the playground blacktop, flower power, jacks in one hand, pixie haircut, trying to whistle like a boy. Sitting now at drag king shows, black leather nights, my pals on stage, my piercing whistle soars above applause. Impressed, two butches turn to look at me. The artichoke, a distant memory. And delirious at being a headmistress poet come January. This is from my collection, Earlier Households, called Cliffside. At daybreak, the late winter whale anchors at the bay, unseen and unwished for. I'm sleeping fast with one rib touching you, one bone's excuse for contact. If you should shift, it wouldn't be to wake me. Berries drop soundlessly, eaten by dazed geese. This is a quietness unbroken by the awnings scrolling up, the doors pushed out to let in daylight. Old bookshelves creak with unread weight. My notebooks flutter empty. The hour, the whale, the written word share that invisibility, though all three are important. You move away from me the way a stiff drawer opens, stuttering, shiny, something keeps splintering off. You move toward me like a stiff chair waits, knowing, not approving, the bulk of my intent. Drawer, chair, away and towards, pulling, splintering, we two make a room in disarray where old women lived, have lived, are living. At night, suitcases close up, swallowing our sandy sneakers. The miles walked by playful feet will vanish in our luggage. We become again travelers, mere companions, not dangerous lovers, not reckless legs and hearts. On one more, written when I was a younger woman, your keys. Grieving takes years. Learning your stories took only a night. Recognition grew from your drinking glass, flipped bottle caps, keys I still find scattered and suspended, tossed around my sunroom, winking. Listen. The delicate point of your upper lip against the air that moved as soft as water, like a tunnel through which comfort rode, quiet as wool, and close as my own outline. There in that beginning, you were perfect, cautious as anemones and whiskers, fine as grains of sugar left to linger in the breakfast bowl. I watched it all, took notes, expecting nothing. I gave no one a chance to read my mind. I stood up stammering or sat down telling stories. When it ended, no one but a writer could hear the pinpoint hammer, the precise line of a boundary, the paragraph snuffed out like candle wick. I blamed my age then, born to be divided, my life halved in 2 centuries, this one, that. Thank you.
Our next reader is Colleen McKee. Colleen grew up in the middle of the woods in Missouri, but now lives in Oakland, California,
where she is an editor and teacher.
She is the author of 6 collections of poetry, memoir, and fiction, including, and you're going to love these names, The Kingdom of Roly Polies, 9 Kinds of Wrong, A Partial List of Things I Have Done for Money, and My Hot Little Tomato. With Amanda Crowell Stiebel, she co-edited an anthology of personal narratives, Are We Feeling Better Yet? Women Speak About Healthcare in America. Her chapbook, Routine Bloodwork, was a finalist for Headmistress Press's Charlotte Mew Award and was published in 2020. So, Colleen, where are you right now? Where are you living? And what do you see when you look out your window?
I live in Oakland, California. And when I look out the window, I see both rain and the sun shining. Thank you, Risa and David and Radio Tacoma for helping out with this. The first poem I'm going to read is called In Her Famous Fur-Lined Skirt. I'm writing a novel about a circus, so I've been doing some interesting research. And one woman I read about was Bird Millman, who was a tightrope walker and a big star at the turn of the century. And she said, every girl ought to walk a tightrope. It develops a rare set of muscles and teaches one how to walk properly on the street. But why would a girl want to walk on the street, properly or otherwise, when she could promenade across the sky? In a pink velvet dress, twirling a crimson parasol, Bird hops on the sides of her ballet flats along a string between skyscrapers. The brash Chicago wind throws itself at her, licks her hair like a rowdy puppy. Most women were hung up on clotheslines as Miss Millman explored the umbilical cord joining heaven and earth. She went through three husbands before she was 50. Did men love her best from afar? The gasps, the terrified smiles were mirrors flashing the sun, magnifying its radiance. As the wind flirted with her skirt and she lifted her legs and lowered her fanny, laughing at death and earthbound fools. So that's the first poem in the book. And now I'll read the last one. And then I guess if you want to know what's inside, you can just buy the book. So the last poem is called Human Suck, or The Gospel of Rat Fag. I see the words forgive yourself stenciled three times on my street, 40th Street, on my way to the train. I tap them lightly with my cane each morning, hit them heavy limping home at dusk. Forgive yourself flashes in the streetlights in the rain, reflected in the junction box on the corner of Martin Luther King. Someone stenciled humans suck a few times on 40th, probably someone else. Humans suck is smudged, glopped in what looks to be blistering tar bubbled up from some Oakland hellmouth. I like the two together. Forgive yourself because you're human. Humans suck. Forgive yourself is faded. Humans suck more steadfast despite the angry smear. But I see forgive burnished on the sidewalk, faint as old nickels and pennies. It shows up better in the rain. I see the words I need at my feet. 2. This isn't the first time. 9 years ago, just before I left St. Louis, someone wrote, Forgive Yourself, small, brushed green, on a gutter on South Grand, around the corner from where we lived. First saw it one frigid dawn on the way to the bus. It was a few months after my friend killed herself. All through the ice, the long thaw, the brief spring, Forgive Yourself multiplied. The words, bigger, blacker, sprayed at eye level on stolid brick buildings along South Grand. I still saw my sweetheart's sexy ghost strutting down Grand in striped bell bottoms, smoking and giving me the stink eye, sometimes just sticking out her tongue. One summer dusk looming over the highway, 7 stories up and 10 feet tall, Forgive Yourself, outlined in gold, bold on a gutted warehouse, a swaying thing of splinters, more wind than wood. Teetering over the Mississippi River, who risked their lives to ride it? Every time I see these words, small or monumental, I do forgive myself, if only for that moment, and bless the ones who needed to ride it and did. I can walk these cracked and crumbling cities, knowing someone is blessing us all. Every wretched one of us, no matter what we've done or failed to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Colleen. Thank you very much for that lovely reading. And people should buy your book. So our next reader is Jillian Ebersole. Jillian is a poet, a dance critic, a researcher, as well as a dancer and choreographer. She graduated from Loyola Marymount University with a dual degree in dance and English. Imagine that. She has performed on stages in Los Angeles, Denver, and Paris. Her choreography work merges her love for language and movement. She is a staff writer for the London-based arts collective Bachtrack, as well as a guest columnist at LA Dance Chronicle. Her poetry has been published by Attic Salt,
Pomona Valley Review, May Day Magazine, and Weasel Press. Her forthcoming debut chapbook, The Water Between Us, won the Charlotte Mew Prize and will be published by Headmistress Press in 2021. Hi, Jillian. Where are you and what do you see when you look out your window?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm currently outside Denver, Colorado, and out my window, the sun is setting over the mountains right now, so it's really beautiful. I wanted to start with a poem about my experience as a dance teacher, and it's called Dance Class. Kevin's favorite dance move is flossing. He always wears a black sweatshirt to class, even when I suggest he will get hot. That's probably why he complains every time we do sit-ups. The first time I taught a dance class, it was a Friday in February. Two girls in the back of the classroom gossiped about their Valentines, boys with shadow beards on their faces and knees bigger than their biceps. I felt lonely until we started doing jumping jacks. Kevin reviews last week's choreography, stands in the front row and shakes his hips as well as any of the 24 self-conscious teenage girls around him. I have a deal with my students. They agree to try whatever choreography I propose as long as I play music they like. We do pliés to Beyoncé, try out jazz squares around Lizzo's beats, waltz with Frank Ocean. In this high school English turned dance club classroom, the dancers are all people of color. I worry I can't teach anything without impressing some part of my colonialist ballet training on them. They much prefer hip hop anyway. The first time Kevin wore a rainbow bracelet, I didn't blink. He never asks if I have a boyfriend. When I asked him what he loves most about dance, he put his hands in the pocket of his black sweatshirt and smiled. I feel like myself for the first time. And then I just wanted to share two poems from my book, which will be published soon. And the first is called Venice Beach, and it's inspired by the poet Georg Trockel. The dingy canals choke and sputter. White bridges span the water, and I am caught by the texture of your hand in mine. The callus on your index finger tinges my memory. Regret distracts me from looking between your teeth. The radio thumps to the fidgety beat of your fist on the dash. When the sun sets, you wander. I wish my glasses would fog up around you. Then you would never have seen me weep for the water between us. And then the last poem from my new book is called, I Don't Know Much About Palmistry, But I Am Close Friends with Fate. A fortune teller read your name on the heart line of my palm. I used to believe the road was supposed to be barren. Closets are dark and beds empty. The classroom, a gavel, religion, a crucifixion. If God is love, then I met her in you. Felt her breathe in your ribcage, got drunk on your holy water tears. I joined the church choir of creaky joints and bouncing knees. At your table, there is no sacrificial lamb and no blood but our own. God is a high chair toddler who laughs when her feet touch the grass. In this church, we worship refrigerator duets and unmade beds. 2 a.m. popcorn paired with expensive wine and radio blur. My heartline ends in a feather just between your porch and my stubbornness. Thank God for phone calls and apologies. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Jillian. That was lovely. Wow. Can't wait to see your book. So our next reader and the last reader for this segment of the program is Hillary Brown. Hillary is a Pushcart nominated writer and queer disability activist living in Oakland. Their chapbook, When She Woke, She Was an Open Field, was published by Headmistress Press and was a finalist for the Charlotte Mew Prize. So, hi, Hillary. Where are you and what do you see when you look out your window?
Well, I'm actually living in Chicago now, and it's dark out, so I don't really see much of anything. I have a couple of poems to read. The first is called Metaphors for How I Love You. I should write something obviously tragic here, like a pile up on the freeway, or something sweet, like my mother putting me to bed. But I don't want the audience to turn and stare at our progressive worsening, our car after car after car, our sirens, our warnings, all our avoidable loss. And I don't remember my mother ever putting me to bed. I can only imagine. And the imagining is uncomfortable, forced, never sweet, just filled with loss. I want our love to be bare feet on bare grass. I want our love to be that feeling when you're the first person awake in the entire house. I want our love to be a day without pain, a day without that sharp ache of unwantedness and fear of loss. I don't know if I love you like that. I love you like I love the basil that tips your fingers, leaves scented fingerprints on my skin, that I will wash down the drain with no sense of loss. I love you like I love the moon, which is, in the end, just loving a rock. This is from this one, How Grief Sometimes Loses Course. It intersects at incongruous places, now cross-cutting humor, which has always been what you suppose to parallel. It breaks and slows, and finds itself ridiculous. There you are, crying on the toilet, and grief is there, pushing your hair back out of your eyes, asking you whether your lost one would like that new holographic lip gloss, or how it feels not to be able to send her the picture you took of a kestrel, the unexpected soft red of his breast. Ever sarcastic, ever tender, ever speaking in your own voice. Your new companion, marriage indissoluble and only mundane. A partner to watch during breakfast over a spoonful of softening cornflakes. And the last poem is called Cyborgia. I worry that the cyborg is too much an institution, an illusion of the non-disabled. The superhero in the movie, the mixed martial artist, the bots who either make life easy or ruin everything. Yet I recognize the disabled who double as cyborgs. Jillian Viza, Common Cyborg. Do not contradict when I say I'm half machine. I clasp to me lovingly my robot parts. Buried in breast and brain, near to my heart, they steady my beating. Oh, you, your longing attempts at my achieved intersections. What half work, what nothing, what water running through wasted hands. Even your superheroes do not know the ways I am full, filled up more than whole. You ooh and awe at their impressive exoskeletons, unaware of the human and the pistons I hide under my skin. Thank you.
Thank you, Hillary. Thank you so much. Those poems are just magnificent. Thank you, all of you, the readers that we've just heard, Bonnie, Colleen, Jillian, and Hillary. Your readings were fantastic. We're so happy as Headmistress Press to be publishing or having published your books. So this is the end of the first segment of Headmistress Press Poets Read. Please come back next time when we will have more Headmistress Poets reading in segment two of this program.
I wanted to thank you all for the diverse readings. They were wonderful. Very interesting to hear a little science fiction, to hear something that's based on a quite unusual poet of some time ago, Georg Trakl, which was, I think, very, very interesting to think about, Jillian, when you read yours. And I think that this is going to be a very, very interesting set of readings for people to listen to. If you feel that you would like to read another one, I think you could send it in to Steve, and perhaps he could add another one. You read two. One of them was a longer one, Colleen. I know that. That's probably why you chose two of them.
Yeah.
But if you wish to read another poem at some time, you could record that and send that one in. There's two selfie poems. Last selfie at Clallam Bay was one you sent me, and the selfie apocalypse. Would they be appropriate to read side by side?
Sure. I wrote a whole series of selfie poems. I just got on a roll. And yes, they were all written fairly recently. Last selfie at Clallam Bay. The car drives to the end of the road, then stops. The road, once asphalt, has languished into sludge. The trail, now wetlands, teems with devil's grass. In the receding forest, cedar trees peak above low clouds. They dwarf the firs, which look like perfect Christmas trees you might find in someone's living room. The radio dies mid-song. You drove this road to visit Clallam Bay one last time, see the bony old fishing village now deserted. The eagle's nests are empty. Click. You might as well shift into reverse. Take Route 112 back to Highway 101, snaking the sharp curves around the glacial waters of Crescent Lake. When the signal guy waves his flag, you'll know the risen waters have washed out the gravel roads. Here is the place to abandon cars and phones, the time to hike into the woods. Apocalypse selfie. Our breasts are the drooping ice shelves of Antarctica. Our gall is burning and brimmed with stones. Denial hung on fragile limbs until they snapped. When I was 17, so many wounded men told me to smile, my face shattered, as if a girl's smile could save them. After decades of careening, we landed here, searching for a feather of hope, not a head in the oven. We spend most of our time trying to steer our solitary ships in the storm. I knew the day would come when we'd see each other as enemies. We love what we love, and we hate what we don't love. Let's just say the world is too much with us. Or is it we are the world? In this town are old and sick 90-somethings waiting in their wheelchairs, baggy sweats worn over their depends, two world wars and a bowl of dust to eat when all the banks failed. No one tells their stories anymore. If I were prone to regrets, I'd admit I've failed to fully love what I love. I've failed the future. I hate to close the book with this sad refrain. I'd rather toast the future, say, whew, we barely dodged that one, but all of Cascadia is burning. It's a miracle. You can stare right into the sun and not go blind.
Apocalyptic vision, things to come. We are experiencing the things to come. And in your writing, you have you've definitely put down a record of what not only you've lived, but also what you imagine is to come. But thank you very much, all of you. And Risa, good job. I think the sound quality was excellent and enjoyed your poetry very much. You have been listening to Sound Poetry. And you've heard a variety of very fine verse this afternoon from Risa Denenberg's Headmistress Press and the Poets. Wonderful, wonderful work, all of you. Very good. Thank you for joining us today on Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma. Thanks a lot for coming and spending the time with us.